Situations must go wrong, but this has never yet prevented me wanting far too much for far too long. Looking back, I could have played it differently.
Elaine Page and Barbara Dixon's performance of I Know Him So Well remains the biggest-selling UK chart single ever by a female duo.
Now at least I know him well. Wasn't it good?
Oh, so good.
Wasn't he fine?
Oh, so fine.
Isn't it madness? He can't be mine.
It reached the top of the chart in 1985 and has inspired many covers.
No one in your life is with you constantly.
Here's Melanie C.
No one is completely on your side.
I did do an album inspired by the musical theatre that I love a few years ago, and I duetted with Emma Bunton. We did I Know Him So Well from Chess, which is a great duet, and there are not that many great female duets. So for me, it was an obvious choice. And Chess is a wonderful musical. It's a great score. It was never as successful as I think it ought to have been.
Learned about the man before I...
An original story conceived by Tim Rice, Chess focuses on the political and personal tensions of two chess champions during the Cold War. To bring this story to life, Tim partnered with hit songwriters ABBA's Benny Andersson and Björn Ulvaeus.
I think when you're working with Björn and Benny, you're going to think about the charts because they're pretty good at that sort of thing. And I was very lucky to be working with them. If you're writing something which is a musical, you've got to pay attention to the storyline first. But equally, you think, well, this is such a good tune. Maybe if I get the words right and it makes sense out of context, then it could be a hit. And it's not really sheer greed that you want it to be a hit single, but it's then that would draw attention to the whole project. And if you've got two outstanding singers who are different in their approach, as Elaine and Barbara were, I think with that and Björn and Benny, it was looking good. It's interesting. I always remember when I Know Him So Well was finished in the studio, I said it would be a really original idea to have a hit with two girls. And then I realised what a stupid thing I'd said. Benny and Björn said, yeah, that would be interesting after 9 number ones or something.
Despite all their hits, at the time, Björn and Benny weren't convinced their songs would translate onto the stage.
Well, it's interesting because I think Judy Kramer, the producer of Mamma Mia, had a bit of a job persuading Björn and Benny to begin with that their stuff could work in a theatre as well as it had on record. And I think a lot of other people in the business thought, well, they're great songs, but there's no storyline. A lot of their songs have a story within them, a very powerful story. I mean, some of Björn's lyrics, Winner Takes It All, for example, wonderful story, it's all there.
I apologize, If it makes you feel bad seeing me so tense, no self-confidence. But you see, the winner takes it all.
It was very clever, I think, of the writers and directors and producers of Mamma Mia to put songs, some of which are very deliberately light-hearted songs, and put them all together and get a coherent story. And in a way, that's almost as important in that show's case. It was the fact the story, although it was slightly tongue-in-cheek, was a good story, a simple story. Add that to brilliant songs, and you're well away. But brilliant songs on their own don't always mean a hit show. I mean, that's been proven time and time again.
Mamma Mia led a new surge in popularity for the jukebox musical. One of the most recent audience favourites is The Commitments. Telling the story of an Irish pub band hitting the big time, it features huge soul and Motown hits from the 60s. Beverly Knight saw Killian perform in London's West End. Mustang Sally, my baby.
Guess you better slow. The way that he approached it was with a real honesty, because he hasn't got R&B chops. That's not what he does. But what he has got is a lot of soul. So because of that soul, because of that honesty that he brings to his singing, it just lit those songs up every time.
Young girls, they do get weary wearing that same old shaggy dress.
Killian Donnelly.
We have our story and we're performing these incredible songs, but they don't fuel the narrative around. We're performing them in pubs, and that's what really connects with the audience.
Try a little tenderness.
They've always heard these songs in pubs, and that's what they capture. You've got a band of about 10 voices and instruments putting this song together, and what they love is that it's just thrown together in a garage.
Just anticipating the things that she never, 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 never possesses yet.
So when you have a voice like Deco that just rings out, and then the three girls, and then the voices start blending, and they discover what a harmony is, you feel that energy bounce off the stage, and you see them going from bad to good and then amazing as they perform on a stage at the end.
You've got to.
Classic songs make for a classic soundtrack, but it was Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction that inspired a new generation of filmmakers to experiment with music.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When they gathered around and started talking,
Cousin Billy would take me walking out through the backyard, we go walking. Then he'd look into my eyes. Lord knows, to my surprise, the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a priest.
Here's Sophie Ellis-Bextor.
It's sort of a bit of a benchmark soundtrack because Quentin Tarantino, as a director, clearly put just as much thought into the soundtrack as he did into the dialogue and the scripting. And I think it had been a long time, it felt like, since the soundtrack, aside from being a musical, had been given that much credibility and thought. In fact, it's possible to believe that some of the scenes he might have written because he'd found this incredible bit of music he just had to use. He's clearly a big fan of all that era. I mean, he sort of, I suppose, merged the line as well between soundtrack by the soundtrack when you got it had lots of dialogue from the movie on it, so you're already in that scene. You turn things around, and after that point, after Pulp Fiction, I think soundtrack suddenly became, actually, maybe this isn't just a sort of afterthought, maybe this can be something that's as integral as the characters, the story and the script.
Mrs. Mia Wallace.
And how about your fella here?
Vincent Vega.
All right, let's see what you can do. Take it away.
John Travolta, he had a very good year in 1978 because that's when Grease came out and Saturday Night Fever, and they're both like the number one and number two sort of biggest grossing movies of that year. It's funny, it's hard to think of anyone else but John Travolta being in that role. I mean, his dancing's phenomenal. He just sort of seemed to be Danny Zuko. I think the key to any musical standing test of time has got to be that the songs resonate, they sound that they're coming from a real place, it tells a story.
Summer loving had me a blast.
Summer loving happened so fast.
Sometimes it's funny, if there's an emotion, a complex emotion, sometimes in music you can actually convey these things in a way that you can't do if you're just doing it with a spoken word. I think it just... the music can speak when you can't. The drama can be accentuated or kept more intimate. And I think, especially when you're watching a character, if they sing, it feels like it's coming from a place that's very sincere and innocent. And I think that can be really affecting.
She swam by me, she got a cramp.
You're the One That I Want and Summer Nights are actually in the top 20 biggest selling singles of all time or something crazy like that. But they're just really fantastic, feel-good, sing-along songs. I mean, that one obviously is also, you know, the bit at the end of the movie when Sandy's had this transformation. She's been sewn into her leggings. They're at the amazing party at the end of the summer, you know, the school year. And, it's just... I think every girl, when you're watching when you're little, you're like, maybe I've got that in me that I could just transform into this vamp. And then Danny's like, yeah, I will definitely get out of her.
Factor star Ella Henderson sang her interpretation of You're the One That I Want to try and win over the public in 2009, but it wasn't her favourite song from the film.
I absolutely love the film Grease. I used to be so, so in love with John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John.
Guess mine is not the first heartbroken. My eyes are not the first to cry. I'm not the first to know. There's just no getting over you.
I would say my favourite song would be Hopelessly Devoted to You. I used to sing that on the karaoke when we had all our family round. I would sing that all the time to my family. It was quite soft and really pretty, the way it sounded, and it kind of suited my voice growing up, so I used to love that.
Ella's favourite interpretation was the 2001 Grammy Award-winning single from Moulin Rouge.
Say that I absolutely love the version of Lady Marmalade. I remember I'd dance around to it at college and always pretend to be Christina Aguilera when she came in on that huge, massive, big diva high note. And the song was so successful just because the original itself was so huge. LaBelle is incredible, so I think that song to take on by such empowering females, especially at that time in the industry, I think that's what made it so big.
I fall off my chair and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
Beverly Knight.
It's reaching people, but on the widest and most easily digestible medium and art form that you can do. Who hasn't sat at the cinema, popcorn in hand, you know, with their drink at the side, and watched a movie? And again, it's that accordance thing, everybody going through the same emotion, but you're watching it through the screen, and it screens all over the country, all over the world. Who wouldn't want to be part of that? Who wouldn't want to be plugged into that system where one song that you sing in that particular movie at that crucial point grabs everybody? Any way that I could get to be a part of a film soundtrack would be amazing. I mean, I guess the zenith of soundtracks or songs that go with films would be the Bond theme, which would be an absolute dream come true. I'd love something like that, but, you know, we'll see. But, yes, I would absolutely love to be a part of a film soundtrack. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
We've nearly reached the end of the magic of the soundtrack songs. But before the curtain comes down, we have to celebrate the biggest musical hit of recent times.
The snow glows white on the mountain tonight, not a footprint to be seen. A kingdom of isolation, and it looks like I'm the queen. The wind is howling like this swirling storm inside. Couldn't keep it in, heaven knows I tried. Don't let them in, don't let them see. Be the good girl you always have to be. Conceal, don't feel, don't let them know.
Here's Rebecca Ferguson.
I think Frozen was one of those films that kind of took everyone by storm, really. I think it had a lovely sentiment to it. As well as the lovely sentiment, it had great music in it. I think Let It Go is one of those, you know, lovely Disney classics that I think everybody just loves. Even adults, you know, what I noticed when it came out was even adults had it on their iTunes. So as well as the kids singing it, the adults were singing it. It's just a proper, well-made, well-produced and orchestrated lovely song.
Transcending the film itself, Let It Go has become a huge international hit, winning the Grammy Award for Best Original Song and hitting charts across the world, from Brazil to South Korea. Sir Tim Rice.
I first heard the song Frozen when it was already a hit, I think. I was intrigued by it because Idina Menzel, who sang the original version, I know, and I've worked with her, and she's a fantastic performer. And I don't think when I first heard it, I was aware that it was a hit. I thought, wow, that's Idina. That was my first thought. I know that voice. But when you hear it a couple of times, you realise it has to be a hit. It's a bit like a kind of I Wish song, or it's I Will Survive, it's This Is How I'm Going to Lead My Life type song, which, if you do them well, often work, because people say, oh, yeah, I can identify with that.
So, you want to know what is the magic of the soundtrack song?
There's no rhyme or reason, really. Things just can grab you round the throat and round the heart. If it gets you in there, deep in there, you've won.
The call never bothered me anyway.
I'm Mark Goodyear. The magic of the soundtrack song was written and produced by Ellie Davis. It was a Wise Buddha production.